of that glopped-up fly that I didn't even answer it, and I tore up the letter, which I wish later I hadn't.
I'll tell you something of what happened to the trading wire antenna and why it was removed. It was Amelia didn't understand some of the technicalities of antennas and radio too well. Probably as well as any pilot did in those days. Wasn't any need to understand all that much about it. That's what experts are for, to help you. But there was a fellow back at Burbank who worked for United Airlines at the time. I can't remember his name. Joe Gurr. And Millie wanted some help with her radio, and it wasn't working up to stuff. So she asked Mance over here if he had anybody to help. And Paul said, well, we don't have anyone that's good on radio, but United Airlines got a guy named Gurr over here that's really red hot.
Well, you know, at that time, only the airlines really had radio.
You flew across country quite a bit without any radio at all, didn't you?
Well, receivers were not too bad, but in order to have a transmitter, I had one put in the beach demonstrator I was flying in 1937, and the thing was a box about that long and about that wide and about that high.
Well, they were too big.
And you had to have this trailing wire antenna in order for them to work. And it was such a nuisance that after about 6 months I had it taken out. It took up only two people to sit in the back seat, and if one wanted to have their feet propped up on the plane, this great big box, because there wasn't any place else to put it. If you wanted the baggage compartment, and that put it behind the CG, which didn't make it very nice. And then this trailing wire antenna, half the time you'd forget to reel it in when you were coming in the line. And you'd have the little plumb bob would pull off, and then all this wire would be all globbed up all over everywhere, and it was a mess.
Well, I wonder if you could possibly identify what you think that might be there. It's here.
No, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a part of the trailing antenna. At least mine was a great big round disc, kind of like a... And it was mounted in here. It was about so tall.
You don't recognize that as
hand reel it.
The tuner for low frequency radio.
More than likely, that's what that is.
I know what this is. This is for the Western Electric radio that used to be installed.
But I'm pretty sure it wasn't to reel in the trailing wire antenna.
Well, Joe Gurr, she said this trailing wire antenna is an awful nuisance.
I never did fly with Amelia and Lockheed electric, so I don't.
This is the same picture. That's just a blow up of the radio mast.
I was in the cockpit a couple of times just looking, but I'm.
Oh, Jill made. She said this trailing wire antenna in the first place. Whenever we're coming in, Noonan's up front, and the trailing wire is in the back, and.
Well, Noonan was in the back.
Well, he could come back and forth over the top of the tanks, and sometimes he'd be up front for takeoff and for landing, and then he'd go back in the back to navigate. And anytime he wanted to run the training wire out or in, Noonan had to go in back and crank it in. Well, it was just a nuisance, and she said, anything you can do about it? He says, sure, he says, as long as you're not going to use it for long distance. She said, no, we could only use it close in. Neither one of us know code or anything. How about, he said, I'll make you a coil that'll match up your 500 kilocycles to your little flat-top antenna. It won't work very good, but at least you'll be able to put out some kind of a signal if you're right by a ship. So you'll have to be fine. So he made up this... I think I know what that is, but I just wondered because you were circa the times might have remembered. By the way, this is a picture of Amelia up on top of the tanks in her airplane. Anyway, Joe Gurr made this up for her, and it worked fine and all that, and it was strictly just for being close in. Mm-hmm. Well, when they got to Miami, Amelia was having trouble with her radio, and it wasn't putting out like it should. So she got the Pan American guys to take a look at it. This is how Noonan went back and forth. Normally they had a bamboo pole with a clip on the end of it, and they put messages and reach up and pat the other on the guy on the shoulder and hand the message to him. You know how noisy those things were. And then when they got to Miami, they started monkeying with the antenna. Well, you got it the wrong length, so they changed the insulators, and they changed the way it ran, where the lead-in ran and whatnot, and they finally got it working pretty good. But in the process, they changed the electrical characteristics of the antenna. And they had removed the treading wire antenna because now the 500 kc thing was the coil. Mm-hmm. And at Miami, they removed the treading wire antenna. The sheet metal man took it off and skinned it over. And then they started monkeying with a blacktop antenna, and they were doing this at the same time they were having trouble with the autopilot. They were working on the autopilot and working on the antenna. And they recut the antenna, tried different things, and they finally got the antenna to work good. And it worked quite good on 3105 and 6210. However, in the process, they changed the electrical characteristics of the flat-top antenna. Now, the 500 kc tuner is out of tune with it, and it's no good. So now she doesn't have a trailing wire antenna, and she doesn't have the 500 kc tuner at all. So there's no use. So it's fine if she just pulled the tuner out and everything, because all she has is 3105 and 6210. This information was given to the Navy. I have a telegram from GT to the Chief of Naval Operations, I believe, at the Navy. And he did give that. No. He did. He gave it. He gave it to the Department of Commerce. He gave it to Mrs. Ruth Hampson. The department. I have the telegram that he sent to her, telling that the use of 500 kc's was, what's the word he used? Not unlikely. Worse than that. It's very doubtful, or something to that.
Very doubtful.
The use of 500 kc's at all is very doubtful. She changed it to close in for some reason when she relayed the information to the Coast Guard. And then it got further transferred to we'll use 500 kc's close in. But GP didn't say that. He said the use of 500 kc's, but it was like one of these things where one guy whispers.
GP, I apologize.
One guy whispers and one guy's ear, you know. I have an actual copy of the telegram.
Oh, I wonder why he didn't send it to the Navy.
Well, it was one, everybody kept changing one little word.
Yeah.
And like the people that whisper in one person's ear and it comes out the other end, you don't even recognize what they were talking about. And it finally got changed from the use of 500 kc's is very doubtful to we'll use 500 kc's close in. And it really wasn't GP's fault on that, though I know he got blamed very heavily for it. Anyway, this was the actual tank installation, but this is not the final radio installation. Other radios were installed after this. This was taken in January 1937 in
Peterborough. You can see the amount of work he's put into.
Oh, my. I should say so.
Anyway,
it's
been
fun. One person say so. Everything's done.
But has it been interesting?
Oh, it's the most exciting thing I've ever done. Most fun I've ever had in my life. I want to get back to you for a minute now. The heck with all the other things. If you had to do over again, would you do anything differently?
I don't think so. when I look at Bill and Pat today and the kind of people they are, I don't regret a bit giving up a vision of the career. To me, they are the most rewarding things I've ever done. And if I had it to do over again, I hope I would do the same thing.
Have you flown since
1936? Oh, yes.
Quite a bit?
Well, I flew up until 2 years ago when I didn't get my medical renewed. I had a heart problem, and I went back last year and took the physical again, and it came out real good. But I can't get Oklahoma City to...
You want some help?
They want to prove it.
You want some help?
No, I don't think so.
Because we have the best heart doctor in the world in Denver who does nothing but specialize in getting medical certificates back to people. And in your case, we could make it. I think Alba owes you something. And Becky isn't around anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm 71 now, and...
You were
in America,
were pretty close to me.
Oh, no, she was about 7 or 8 years old.
She was 9 years old.
That's right, she was almost 40 when she came.
That's something else, by the way. You know, everybody thinks her birthday was July 24th, 98. Did you know she was really born in 97?
Mm-hmm.
They were all a year off on their age on it.
Is that right?
This is why I laugh when I see
people. Well, that made her a year older. Well, she was 9 years old.
Yeah, she'd be coming up now on her 80th birthday.
Yeah. But, you know, like I keep telling people, there's some advantage to Amelia having died when she was dead. Because now everybody remembers her as being 40.
Yeah, I see. That's right. I can't find a single picture of her.
Never get any older. Yeah, I've often wondered what a media would look like.
Unusual success, because you made it two ways. You know, and that's tough. One way is pretty tough to make, but two ways and two lives, which you've managed to do, or even three, and being an author and writing a book, I know how difficult that is. But you not only were a success in your flying and made yourself a place in women's aviation and aviation history that nobody can ever erase, and you made it raising a family which is completely successful and which you're very proud of, and having made it as an author and whatnot, I see why you could be very satisfied the way things went.
I tell you, I'm not an author, which you'll find out when you read that book. I wish I was, because there's so many things to write about, but it comes hard with me because I'm not a pro, and you think one thing, but by the time your pen squiggles on the paper, it doesn't come out that way.
Then you rewrite it again.
What? I don't have the patience to do it.
What thing about the 99ers or women in aviation or media, do you think that people misunderstand? What do you wish, some idea that you wish people didn't have that idea? You don't think that's the right idea? You think that things should have been different?
I don't think I quite understand.
Well, about the 99s and the purpose of the organization, the way the organization goes, is everything perfect, or do you think some people have a wrong idea about why the organization started or anything? See, I don't know what.
There isn't anything perfect.
Okay. My wife keeps telling me that about me.
Oh, I don't know whether people do or not. I don't think so.
How about in your life? How about in your life, in your career? Would you wish there was something people would understand differently than the way that they do?
Well, I don't know how people understand it, so I wouldn't know. I mean, I have the vaguest notion. I wish I did.
Well, what do you think was, what do you think was the high point of your flying career?
Winning the Derby.
I know you more as being one of the original founders. In fact, I thought you were first vice president. I didn't know you were secretary of the 99ers.
Well, I think later on I was a vice president. Guys, I don't remember. I just remember doing all the hard work and getting it all done.
Secretary's your best at, I guess.
As far as we're concerned, you're a very famous woman, pilot.
You know what? I hope, a few years of kicking around.
Yeah,
and I do a lot of lecturing to high school classes and stuff. I hope you do, too.
I'm
always to this organization or that, and more so all the time now, because luckily I'm able to count among some of my friends some very happy people in the early days of this business, which I don't deserve to be in the same breath, but because I did have a little part in the very latter part of aviation, I was able to meet these people, and some of them became friends. For instance, Jack Northrop is a friend that we go through Santa Barbara and see every time we get a chance to.
Mm-hmm.
He's long since retired, him and Margaret in Santa Barbara, but he's still healthy and happy and alive. And someday, Jack isn't going to be with us any longer, and Bert Balton's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Jimmy Doolittle and Lowell Thomas, who's not in aviation so much,
mm-hmm.
but these people I know as a friend.
He got married.
84. Yeah, and he picked a young chick, too.
Yeah.
49. Half his age plus 7. But someday I'm going to be able to relate visiting Louise Baden and Jimmy Doolittle and...
Satan.
Huh? Satan. Yeah, there I go. Boy, oh boy.
And well, you're very flattering.
I'll work on it. But no, it's more than that. It reminds me of, I was at Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. I'm an Oregonian, and we were raising funds for the museum, and we were having a little banquet and whatnot. And I met the first man who ever flew an airplane in Oregon. And that was about, I don't know, 1909 or something like that, or 10 or 11. I don't remember when he did it. And I think Quimby had already flown across the English Channel by then. But anyway, he flew the first airplane, and he was working on putting a pair of floats on a DGA 15 Howard, and having an awful time doing it. And I said, when are you going to retire and quit? He says, quit, retire, don't be silly. He says, I want to wear out, not rust out. But he said, I was talking to him, we were sitting next to each other at dinner, and he said, you know, he said, I really get a kick out of it. Said, you know, I look forward, I get to invite it to 3 or 4 of these things a year. He says, if it's the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, or if the Aviation Old Timers
mm-hmm.
Association
mm-hmm.
or something, I always get to sit at the head table. He says, I look forward to these for months before they come. He said, and it gives me a lease on life and something to look forward to, and it's really great. He said, it was the luckiest thing I ever did. This happened to be the first dumb fool to take an airplane off the road. The only thing I ever did in my whole life. I'm just a mechanic other than that. But I just happened to be in the right place and did the right thing at the right time. And I was thinking to myself, you know, someday I'm going to be an old timer too if I'm lucky enough
mm-hmm.
to live that long. And I want to know and meet and learn as much as I can about so many of the people that...
And were born at the right time. Maybe.
Well, in a sense.
And were in the right
yes.
places.
Like I say, I was born some darn late.
Yeah.
Of course, I'd have probably killed myself a long time ago if I hadn't been for the regulations protecting. But that is why I was asking you questions about anything that you wish were different or anything you wish you were known for differently or whatever. If any one thing that you think that Amelia, people have the wrong idea about Amelia or anything else in aviation and women.
How did you think that Truman Oliver portrayed Amelia in that movie?
Well, I think she probably did a pretty good job with the script she had and the direction she had. There was some kind of slight resemblance. But, course, I think you have to realize that that movie was made for general public consumption, and I tried to keep thinking about that all the time I was looking at the frame. Actually, I thought it would be worse than it was. But, of course, there were so many things that weren't factual and then misleading things and then boo-boos on facts. And but it, I kept thinking all the way through, oh, Amelia would have had an absolute fit. She would just have had a fit.
What was she having to do?
Oh, because of the way the whole thing was portrayed. It wasn't Amelia, and it wasn't GP, and it wasn't Paul Mann. And aside from the inaccuracies and stuff, but it maybe that's the way the public envisions them. I don't know.
I
think
you
think
you did
that the
a terrible job, though.
Well, like I say, it could have been worse.
You feel that Amelia had much higher ideals than they portrayed her to have?
Oh, yes. And one thing that just absolutely flew me was when they were sitting in that booth and after Amelia had cracked up at Honolulu and GP was asking her if she wanted to try it again, that flew me. Any more like GP and it wasn't any more like Amelia than that is from Day.
That conversation would have just never taken place
no.
That way. I want to put a question.
And the thing at that scene when she was at Purdue too, it was just as different as Matt from Day.
Oh, you mean when
he
came to see her at Purdue?
Yeah, and the reason she went there in the first place. I mean,
what was the reason she went there?
For the airplane.
Mostly because she wanted the airplane.
Mostly. But also, Amelia has always been interested in furthering aviation in all of its facets, and part of it is was with people, and she was extremely interested in the building they were setting up there, and then the real lure though, of course, was the flying laboratory, but she had a very sincere interest in what she was doing there at Purdue, and I think she contributed quite a lot to it.
Dr. Elliott was sincere. He thought that she would be good for their co-education.
Yes, yes. But the way that thing was handled was just completely...
I have a problem with Amelia in one respect. I posed this question to almost anyone who knew her well, and I get the same response from almost everyone. I want to try it on you. You had to describe Amelia in one word, and I'm going to help you a little bit. Or unless you don't need any help. What one word would you say to describe them?
Human.
But human means can mean has faults.
Amelia has them.
What would you say would be her fault?
Well, like I say, there isn't anyone or anything perfect. I mean, Amelia was a... just about like everybody else, on a high level, she was extremely intelligent. And...
That's funny. Her sister doesn't remember as being extremely intelligent.
Well, I don't think Amelia and her sister were very close together. Were very close ever. Well, I'm not saying that Amelia was an intellectual. I'm just saying that she was highly intelligent, as I think I'm highly intelligent. And you think you're highly intelligent, and you think you're highly intelligent.
I know she is. She catches me at everything I do.
And she had the ability to develop empathy with people, which a lot of people don't have. She was a terribly kind person and extremely thoughtful of other people. She was antisocial, really.
She was antisocial?
Antisocial.
You know, you're very much describing him.
Go ahead.
Well, she loved being around the people she enjoyed, but she hated being in crowds. I do too, that kind. She had the ability and used it of being able to stand back and look at herself and being honest with herself. She was warm and a very generous person with herself. And with what money she has, she has helped an awful lot of people go ahead and get their licenses and trying to find jobs for them and the rest of it. I think it's unfortunate that Amelia, since her death, and it seems to be growing all the time, and particularly with the 99, is that she's, they've gotten her into practically a sainthood thing, which I think is most regrettable and very unfortunate. It's nice to be remembered, which is a sort of form of immortality. But to be placed up on a pedestal is something else again, and which Amelia would very much resent having, you know, people doing to her. She had the frailties that most of us do. She Well, she was just human. I mean, she made her mistakes and did a few things that probably in retrospect she maybe wished she hadn't done. And but she was a most likable person and a cut above the average. But I say again that she, as a pilot, she was just average.
One thing,
and you were mentioning about her not understanding anything about mechanics. Well, she didn't very much. She should have more than she did to have been involved in the things.
But she didn't start down at the bottom like you did. Luckily or unluckily, she started out right
well,
a hero pilot practically. Well, she learned a little bit down at Kenner when she had that Aerostar. But that only lasted for a few months.
Yeah, that didn't run very long.
One thing that people will describe her as, you know, she didn't smoke, she didn't drink, she didn't like off-color stories. She really
was a little sticky that way.
She wasn't a sensual woman. People describe her in various ways. You know, oh, she was a prude, or you know, like she wouldn't go out if we were going to go dance and have a few drinks. She's, no, I have some writing or some reading to do. and she'd stay in her room. And, oh, you mean she was a prude? No, no, she wasn't a prude. She didn't object to you going out and doing those things. That was, you know, that was perfectly fine. She understood that, thought that was wonderful, but she wouldn't participate. Terry used to say, Paul would start one and say, hey, you're the one about to... and she would just put her arm and shoulder, Paul, I don't want to hear your story, and walk off, you know. And, you know, I'm not interested in your stories, mm-hmm. and just walk off. But it's all right. Paul wanted to tell all everybody else in the hangar and laid a story heard down at the barber shop. Mm-hmm. That was fine to her, but she didn't want to participate. But she wasn't a prude. Then I said, well, she was a saint. No, she wasn't a saint. Evidently, she walked the tightrope down this area of somehow not becoming a prude, not becoming a saint. But your earlier description about her as a someone who had high ideals and unto thine own self be true seemed to be the key or byword of her every day, every moment. But I can find one flaw in Amelia's normal basic character, and I don't know, I want to try it on you. One thing about Amelia that I noticed that when she was through with someone, she was through with him.
What do you mean? Is this true?
Is this true?
Yes, yes. But there are a lot of people like that.
Well, I'm not even particularly calling it a fault.
I'm that way too. And I suspect both of you are too. You get.
No, I'm not here.
You just get utterly disgusted with somebody for some reason or other, and you're through. I mean, life is, there's too much to do. There are too many other people to be bothered with someone in whom you have lost admiration or and confidence or whatever.
Well, I even found this in not even quite such nice terms. I even found this in people that she had dealings with and had used or had, who could do something for her but no longer could. And when they reached the point they could no longer do anything for her,
she dropped him.
I can find no time where she ever went back and looked up some old friend.
I don't know. And I'm not defending Amelia because, as I said, she was very human, and I wish that I could tell you just how human. But I think one partial explanation for it might be that Amelia. Well, 24-hour-a-day were not long enough. She had so many irons in the fire and was doing so many things on her own that she either couldn't get somebody else to do or didn't have the money to have somebody else do. And I've been in a few situations like that when so much is happening so fast that... you just get numb, and you don't do a lot of the amenities that you would do if you were living even a halfway normal life.
You feel that the money caused a lot of pressure on her?
Oh, yes.
The fact that they did not have the money that people thought they had?
Well, you don't even need to say they. Amelia never had any money of her own, and of course it didn't get any better when she married G.P. So there was always the pressure of money, always.
People get the idea that when somebody's famous,
oh, sure, when you go to a hotel, you stay free, right? You go down to the dining room, they feed you for nothing, right?
Yeah, he has to say. For 50 cents, I can get a cup of coffee.
It's so pleasant.
Well, the book writing was one thing, but I tell you what drained the media more than anything else, I think. And that were the lecture tours. They were so time-consuming and so strength-sapping. They were harder than any flight she ever made.
Same thing for him.
It was
just grueling. What I feel about those things,
grueling.
Was the same way. There were a bunch of non-doers living off people who had done something. Mm. They just want to touch you or just want to be near you for that moment.
Yeah.
Maybe I met you, and that's very draining.
But I used to worry about her an awful lot because she took on awfully big bites of things like that simply because either she was in hock for a flight she had just done or was trying to get some money for a flight she wanted to do or move. And of course, that was her main way of getting money, was through lecturing and authoring. And which was the reason she took the job with Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, which reminds me, we haven't touched on that at all. I have all the articles that she wrote for Cosmopolitan. And she did some very good work for women. Point of view,
mm-hmm.
I thought some of her articles were right on.
Amelia wrote quite well.
She really did. She had a way of getting her finger. Somehow she would come up with words that are unbelievably
mm-hmm.
correct. You know,
mm-hmm.
how did she search out that word? But also the things she were writing about. Now I would consider some of her Cosmopolitan writing really quite advanced. I would consider some of it really. Right up to the 60s, as far as the Durham Women Libs doesn't do anything for you. We'll call it for recognition for women's rights, or whatever you want to call it. But she felt she had a mission.
Yes.
And that she
and
had...
That was one of her frailties, too. It was almost a fetish with her. And I always thought that it was one thing I didn't admire about her movie. It just absorbed her completely. And to the detriment of other things that I think would have been more meaningful to her and would give her a better rounded life than she had. But she really was just terribly gung-ho in that area. Almost like a Carrie Nation kind of a thing. But, you take people for what they are, and we all have objectionable qualities that we hope are in the minority, and the non-objectionable ones are in the majority. And with Amelia, she had certain objectionable things about it. But the nice things far outweighed the...
You felt that her drive was a little bit much, her push.
Yes. And, of course, when you do have that, then you have a tendency also to be a little more self-centered than you should be, because there isn't any other way you can be. And Amelia wasn't as tolerant as one would expect of someone with the character she had. But I think that the learning to be tolerant of other people is one of the most difficult acquisitions to make, and it takes a long time to develop it. I'm sure that had Amelia lived, and had she done what she had thought she would after that fight, and that was settling back to a more normal existence, that she would have acquired that, because she had enough personal honesty to, Amelia knew what her faults were, I think. But she just didn't have time to do anything about it.
That's a lot of public pressure on her.
Oh, don't you know? Well, that was one of the reasons for marrying GP.
You take some of that off, or?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, by the way, I'm a pretty good interviewer. You know how well I've drawn you out?
I certainly do.
I have to, whenever I start out an interview, I never know which way it's going to go. By the way, where'd you get this rug?
Oh, we've had it ever since when? Everything we have is old.
Well, now, is this a Persian rug?
Yes.
Boy, you know, this is absolutely priceless now. You know that, huh? Be careful of those cigarette butts
there.
Yeah. Oh, they're fantastically priceless. It's beautiful. You mentioned Eddie Gorski's name, you know, her mechanic back 32. You ever know what happened to Eddie?
No, I don't, and I wish I did.
I've located just about
everybody else. It seems to me that he's still alive, and he's still up around the New York area.
Okay, I'll go after him in the New York area.
I remember reading something in one of the old, you know, lesser aviation things, magazines, that there was some occasion they had up in New York about a year ago, and I think his name was mentioned.
Okay. I'll look around the New York. I'll and call some of the aviation editors in the New York.
Yeah, well, I'll bet that somebody around Teterboro Airport could tell you where he is.
Okay. I'll check out near Hasbrook Heights and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter was born in
Englewood,
New Jersey,
really?
And I was flying out of Teterboro at the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Marjorie Gray, when I got my private pilot's license,
she babysat.
Babysat Donna while I took her for her first passenger and my first passenger.
And then look what happened.
That was almost 30 years ago.
Well, the reason that we can understand some of the pressures that is that about a year and a half after Elton's flight, the demands on our time and everything were so great that he was coming off the trip. He'd spend one night at home and he was on an airplane going somewhere to make a speech or a public appearance or whatever. And about a year and a half was about all we could take. We were going to end up in a divorce or something because we didn't have time to be together. We were not communicating more. Just not even, we were together, but we were everybody else's mercy. And that has to have made a great impact on someone who was much, much more famous, 10 times over than he was after his life. So I can understand the pressures.
Well, the lecture tours got me down. That really got me down. You know, one chicken dinner.
And just the pressure of people. You know, at the things that,
which was why I say,
you get into situations where there's so much happening so fast that you just get numb.
Yes, and I, we were very fortunate. I was selected in 1972 and I received the Gold Air Medal of the FAI. And we went to France. They were the host country that year. And we High, Wide, and Frightened by Louise Staten. And President Pompidou presented me with a reception at the Palace of Lycée and whatnot.
Oh,
we were really pretty up there and up, and I got into that, you know, almost blind world. I have to be extremely careful with that, Marie. Just wrap it up.
Yeah, Elgin, I'm going to ask her to do one thing that's going to make this book 10 times more valuable. You got your pen?
For herself.
For herself. Because she's never going to think about how valuable this is, because you never do when you're talking about yourself.
I have.
You got your pen?
Yeah, but don't you. You only, if she wants to, or she can do it after she gets it back.
When she gets,
don't.
You know.
Just point out something
to her. This is your only copy of this book, right. But you ought to at least have your signature on it, so that that's your book, and then everybody knows that's your book. Because the one thing we value that we received in the mail recently, when someone wrote an article about Elgin.